Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
To imagine the spirit of poetry is much like imagining the shape and size of the knowing. It is a kind of resurrection light. It is the tall ancestor spirit who has been with me since the beginning, or a bear or a hummingbird. It is 100 horses running the land in a soft mist, or it is a woman undressing for her beloved in firelight. It is none of these things. It is more than everything. You're coming with me, poor thing. You don't know how to listen. You don't know how to speak. You don't know how to sing. I will teach you.
That's Joy Harjo reading an excerpt from her memoir, Poet Warrior. Joy is a member of the Muscogee Creek Nation and the first Indigenous person to serve as U.S. Poet Laureate. She is also only the second person to hold multiple terms as Poet Laureate. In Poet Warrior, Joy reflects on how the spiritual world influences her, how she accidentally became a poet, and how poetry led her to pursue music and dance. Beta's Steve Gotcher talked with Joy about her life and work. She tells him why she went from calling herself Girl Warrior to Poet Warrior.
That's what the writing gave me to do. I didn't plan on that at all, because I wouldn't really call myself Poet Warrior, but if you think about what a warrior, you know, a warrior is a protector. A warrior, you know, can be a healer. A warrior can be a poet. But that device came about as I was writing this memoir, and suddenly this voice, the young woman, the girl becoming's voice, starts speaking. And so it becomes, in the book, it's like a poetic structure, this voice of this, the inner voice of this young woman. And then I felt compelled, the me I am now, the older woman I am now, to give that girl, to help at least facilitate a coming of age ceremony for that young woman I was. That's how Poet Warrior came to be.
You talk a lot about your stepfather and that being somewhat of an abusive relation. And you mention him as being one of your greatest teachers. You say because of him, you learned to find yourself in the spiritual world. Tell me about that.
I've seen this in a lot of people's stories. I think whether you're a prisoner of war in the encampment of the enemy, or you're a child growing up in an abusive home, or in the middle of some kind of extremely stressful situation, you know, I'm not the only one. We construct, or these places are constructed for us in some way. We participate in them so that we can move through what might be too difficult to bear at that time.
So you're saying that you learn to find yourself in the spiritual world, help you cope with a bad situation?
Probably, but it was always there. I think from the very beginning, I admire great athletes. You know, my athleticism is not in the physical necessarily, although I do weights and dance and all that. But I guess what I should say, what calls to me, or what has always motivated me, is the spiritual realms. And I've learned that, well, the physical is also the spiritual. And I think I came to poetry for that, because poetry is not rhetoric. Poetry is a language that speaks, you know, can speak of things that we can't hear, see, or know, or sometimes even feel yet.
Why do you think it's important for people to write down their stories? You said that you see it as a way of healing.
Yes. What I have learned, what writing has taught me, is that it helps give perspective. And it's like kind of breathing it out, that gives you a better context and perspective for understanding. So to write your story, like I had that, my cousin, Tiffany Harjo, who wound up in prison for driving a getaway car for this stupid little robbery of like a Quick Trip store. She was struggling, and I knew that she had quite a story, and she was in prison. I said, well, write your story. She told me it really helped her. And I said, I'll be a witness if you want a witness. And so she would write and write and send me packets full of her writing longhand, just writing out everything that had happened to her. Telling a story or writing a story in a way is transforming it. To take it from one place using a tool, whether it's digital for sound, you know, speaking your story, or taking a pen or pencil or a keyboard, you're in essence transforming it.
At some point, you started to look at poetry as a tool for justice. How did that happen?
I had no plans to become a poet. I mean, there weren't poets in our neighborhood, or there was no table for career day that says poet, you know. But yeah, I started writing poetry when I was an undergraduate at the University of New Mexico and a part of the Kiva Club, which was the Native Student Club. And we were very politically, socially active. We were looked around at our communities, and most of the students came from communities near the school, near the Albuquerque, not too far. And we began work to be helpful and assist. And that's when I began writing poetry. I met Leslie Silko, I think she's a wonderful poet. She's known for her novels and short stories. I met Simon Ortiz. I met Ishmael Reed around that time. So I was painting these paintings, and I started writing out of that.
So as a musician, you've released 7 albums, playing the saxophone and flutes, and also singing and doing spoken word. Your latest album is called I Pray for My Enemies. What can you tell me about this recording?
That one came out in March. It was recorded at the height of the pandemic. My co-producer, Barrett Martin, called up and says, you know, I'm up here, me and my wife are up here in Port Townsend, Washington, and if you can get up here the last week of the month, I have my setup here and we can get some bass tracks down and voice and bass tracks down, and then we'll just come to Tulsa a few months later. And so we had gotten our little camper RV. It's a really small one, but it works. Drove in the middle of the pandemic all the way up from Tulsa to Port Townsend. That's a long ways. Mm-hmm. And got it going. And wound up doing Fear Song, and from REM, Peter Buck came in and added that really cool guitar part there. I release you, my beautiful and terrible fear. I release you. You were my beloved and hated twin, but now I don't know you as myself. I release you with all the pain I would know at the death of my children. You are not my blood anymore. I give you back to the soldiers who burned down my home, beheaded my children. I give you back to those who stole the food from our plates when we were starving.
He would say, bring out a poem. I said, well, I've thought about doing this one because of the times we're in, the fear poem. So we did a different arrangement of that. And then, you know, some of them were like that. Others were full-blown songs, like How Love Blows Through the Trees, and which I wrote at the height of the pandemic. I was looking out, it was like March or April, and there was no traffic, nothing. It was quiet. It was a nice quiet. It was, the world had shifted in a way that was scary, but also there was a certain, the quiet. I'm still struck thinking about that quiet.
One of the poems that I found most compelling is in your book, and also on the latest record, is called For Calling the Spirit Back from Wandering the Earth in Its Human Feet. I found it an amazing piece of work that is quite comprehensive in a spiritual sense.
Put down that bag of potato chips, that white bread, that bottle of pop. Turn off that cell phone, computer, and remote control. Open the door. Then close it behind you. Take a breath offered by friendly winds. They travel the earth gathering essences of plants to clean. Give it back with gratitude. If you sing, it will give your spirit lift to fly to the stars' ears and back. I think of a poem as being a kind of ritual. You know, the title opens the door, and then the first line, and by that you walk through line by line, each word like step by step. And by the time you get to the end, and every part of the poem has a function, every line. And by the time you get to the end and you walk out the door of the poem, you're transformed.
Welcome your spirit back from its wandering. It may return in pieces, in tatters. Gather them together. They will be happy to be found after being lost for so long. Your spirit will need to sleep a while after it is bathed and given clean clothes. Now you can have a party. Invite everyone you know who loves and supports you. Keep room for those who have no place else to go. Make a giveaway. And remember, keep the speeches short. Then you must do this. Help the next person find their way through the dark.
How did that come to you?
How does any of it come to me? I follow it, you know. It's like I follow it. Yes, I try to take care of my craft. I write notes, I journal. And I tend to go in pockets, you know, if I get in a mode or something, or I have something to do, or there's something that is engaging me on different levels. But I tend to follow it and listen. But a lot of it's really listening and listening to what's there. Like one of my favorite lines in Poet Warrior is, even the monster has a story. And I think about that. I wonder, any artist, you know, we all engage with the spiritual realm, you know.
Right.
And that's where you hear things. I mean, that's where we know love. That's how we, you know, that's how we find art. That's how we find inspiration, etc., you know, is through that kind of conversation.
Right.
So I feel like writing, for me, writing, or whether it's music or memoir or poetry, any of it is like a call and response. Mm-hmm. I put out something and then I listen and then I think, oh, okay. And then I kind of respond to that. And then I listen, oh, okay. And it goes back and forth.
You're now serving your third term as the Poet Laureate of the United States. What do you think you've accomplished during your tenure?
I think what has come about, because I am in this position, that it has helped immensely with awareness of Indigenous people in this country. That, for one, has been really important.
Have you seen a real difference in how people respond because you are the Poet Laureate?
Oh, yeah, of course. yeah, of course. I mean, it's an honorary position. And even before it, my reputation has come not from necessarily awards, because the awards I've gotten from my work have come in more recent years. I do what I love, and I've been lucky to get to do poetry, you know, in my life. And it's taken me a lot of places and so on. So in a way, with the Poet Laureate position, I'm doing what I've always done. I go into communities. I talk with people. I listen. We write poetry, listen to poetry. I've been doing that for years all over the country and around the world. And so I'm doing what I've always done. But the title, of course, you know, it certainly gives me more of a kind of place that I did not have before.
So I have one more final question for you. When events in the world happen, people always ask pundits, journalists, experts to explain it. One time I was listening to the radio and somebody asked, what do the poets say about what's happening? And I thought that was a brilliant question. So I wonder if you have a poem that sums up your thoughts, or some ideas that sums up your thoughts on the current state of the world.
Where do we start? You know, do we start with global warming, tragedy, the emergence of all the social reemergence, or maybe their presence of things that my generation, we thought we had changed, and now everything seems to be in shards, in pieces. And yet there's the children, the grandchildren. Here we are talking. We're talking about poetry on the radio. The radio has not been taken over for the state, or silenced for the state, which we were headed that way in this country. You know, we keep growing and we keep learning. So I'll read this poem. It's called When the World as We Knew It Ended. And I wrote this after 9/11. It was coming. We had been watching since the eve of the missionaries in their long and solemn clothes to see what would happen. We saw it from the kitchen window over the sink as we made coffee, cooked rice and potatoes, enough for an army. We saw it all as we changed diapers and fed the babies. We saw it through the branches of the knowledgeable tree, through the snags of stars, through the sun and storms, from our knees as we bathed and washed the floors. The conference of the birds warned us as they flew over destroyers in the harbor, parked there since the first takeover. It was by their song and talk we knew when to rise, when to look out the window to the commotion going on, the magnetic field thrown off by grief. We heard it, the racket in every corner of the world as the hunger for war rose up in those who would steal to be president, to be king or emperor, to own the trees, stones, and everything else that moved about the earth, inside the earth and above it. We knew it was coming. Tasted the winds who gathered intelligence from each leaf and flower, from every mountain, sea, and desert, from every prayer and song all over this tiny universe floating in the skies of infinite being. And then it was over, this world we had grown to love for its sweet grasses, for the many-colored horses and fishes, for the shimmering possibilities while dreaming. But then, there were the seeds to plant and the babies who needed milk and comforting, and someone picked up a guitar or ukulele from the rubble and began to sing about the light flutter, the kick beneath the skin of the earth we felt there beneath us, a warm animal, a song being born between the legs of her, a poem.
That's Joy Harjo reading her poem, When the World as We Knew It Ended. Joy is the Poet Laureate of the United States and the author of Poet Warrior, a memoir. She spoke with Beta's Steve Gotcher. You can find out more about Joy at WPR.org/beta.
So I created the Marvin Pontiac character so I'd have a mask to sing behind, so it would kind of free me up a little bit, give me a little bit more confidence, and, you know, to give it a character, because John Lurie sings, I just couldn't do that.
The Lounge Lizard himself, John Lurie, joins us in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.